From the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, I'm Barbara Caridi, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, September 2nd, 2016. And on this day, an effort to officially sanction Governor Paul LePage for his obscenity-laced voicemail to a state lawmaker comes to a halt amid partisan squabbling. While Democrats and Republicans argue about LePage, there's another political force in Maine that's expected to have a big influence on Election Day, independent voters. And getting an education at Blueberry Harvest School. Those stories and more after this. This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and Kennebec Valley Community College, offering a late start semester beginning September 26th, kvcc.me.edu. I'm Barbara Caridi. An effort to officially sanction Governor Paul LePage for his obscenity-laced voicemail to a state legislator stalled today after Republican and Democratic leaders tussled over procedure. Republican Senate President Michael Thibodeau told reporters he didn't see a path forward after Democratic House Speaker Mark Eaves initiated a maneuver aimed at impeaching the governor. As Steve Missler reports, the current stalemate further diminishes the prospects of action against LePage, but virtually guarantees that his recent conduct will be a campaign issue through the election.
The day began with a polling message from House Speaker Mark Eaves to members of the House. It asks whether lawmakers will agree to a special session to, quote, take action regarding the governor's conduct. Legislators have until next Tuesday at 5 p.m. to respond, and if they don't, they'll be recorded as no, Eaves' letter read. On its face, the letter seems clear-cut, but it could have political ramifications, if not electoral ones, too. Democrats believe the public backlash to the governor's latest controversy favors their call for his resignation or impeachment. But Republicans, particularly those in the House, are ready to move on, a stance that mathematically could block a special session. Senate President Mike Thibodeau says while some Senate Republicans wanted to censure the governor, they see Eaves' unilateral action as politically motivated.
I get it. It's 60 days before an election, and, it's a great time to maximize your political advantage.
In a statement, Eaves said the poll to lawmakers was broad enough to allow Republicans to take, quote, the action they believe is appropriate.
It's probably the weakest I've ever seen Mike Thibodeau as he was today.
House Democratic leader Jeff McCabe described Thibodeau's decision to give up on the special session as a cop-out. He says Maine people want lawmakers to respond in some way to the governor's conduct.
You know, citizens around the nation, citizens here in Maine, expected us to do something. You know, they expected us to be able to do something in a bipartisan manner, sort of put the partisan politics aside.
Thibodeau released a statement in which he reiterated previous criticism of LePage's behavior. He says he believes the governor crossed the line, brought negative attention to the state, and would, quote, no doubt benefit from additional help to address his explosive behavior. State Senator Roger Cates has been repeatedly critical of the governor's behavior, but he also takes issue with Democrats' actions today. He says Republicans in the Senate wanted to censure the governor, but
to go beyond that, really, unfortunately, smacks of politics in an election year, and it's not looking good as an institution.
House Democrats had hoped to use today's poll and the Tuesday deadline to put Republicans opposing sanctions against LePage on the record, but in a statement, House Republican leader Kenneth Fredette said Eaves' request is illegal. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
As Maine Democrats and Republicans argue over what to do about Governor LePage, there's another major force influencing Maine politics, independent voters. In most states, the two major political parties are well entrenched, and third-party candidates are rarely a factor in the race for president. But Maine has long been known for its independent streak, which extends to politics. And as Mal Leary reports, some political observers believe that third-party candidates will be a factor in Maine this fall.
Maine is different from other states in any number of ways when it comes to presidential elections. While most struggle to get half of their registered voters to go to the polls, Maine frequently reports a turnout of more than 70% of its registered voters. And this year, with several controversial ballot questions, those numbers could be even higher. How that will impact the presidential race is a complicated question. And, says Colby College government professor Tony Corrado, an important one for Republican Donald Trump.
As Trump looks around the country and has this very narrow electoral college path that he has to pursue, every vote becomes important.
Maine last voted for a Republican for president in 1988, and Corrado sees no chance for Donald Trump to win the state this year. But because of the system that Maine uses to cast its four electoral votes, Corrado says Trump may think he has a shot at taking the one electoral vote in the second congressional district. But University of New England political science professor Brian Duff has his doubts.
There's, you know, a far-fetched scenario whereby he gets that one vote from the second district. I do think it's pretty far-fetched.
Others we spoke with agree and expect that Democrat Hillary Clinton will win the state, even though she and Trump have some of the highest negative ratings in the history of presidential contests. And Bowdoin government professor Mike Franz says those high negatives are generating interest in the other two candidates on Maine's presidential ballot.
Jill Stein for the Green Party or Gary Johnson for the Libertarians might be able to make an appeal to some of these voters who are going to come out for some of the other issues that are on the ballot and maybe score a better than expected outcome.
Franz says the ballot questions will likely mean an even higher turnout than usual in an election year, and that could help the smaller parties. Corrado points to the referendum on legalizing marijuana for personal use as a potential boost for Libertarian Gary Johnson.
Where you tend to have in Maine, I think, a streak amongst the voters that tends to find great appeal in Libertarian Party policies. I think that with the marijuana initiative on the ballot, that's particularly appealing to Libertarians.
Corrado says Johnson may also attract support from disaffected Republicans who will not vote for Trump or Clinton or Green Party candidate Jill Stein. Stein might hope to bring in former Bernie Sanders supporters, but UMaine's Mark Brewer doesn't think that will happen.
Disgruntled Bernie supporters may grumble about it, and they may grit their teeth, and they may want to take a shower after, but I think ultimately they'll vote for Hillary Clinton.
Brewer expects that the Libertarians may well gain full party status, which requires 5% of the vote, and he says they might even break into the double digits. He says as compared to voters in many other states, Mainers more open to voting for an independent or minor party candidate.
We've sent a green or two to the state legislature. It is not out of the question for Maine voters to choose an option that is not a D or an R.
UMaine Farmington's Jim Melcher says that the more support the Libertarians draw in Maine, the less likely Trump can get that single electoral vote from the second congressional district. And the independent campaigns appear to recognize their potential for some traction in Maine. Johnson and his running mate, former Massachusetts Republican Governor William Weld, have already campaigned in the state. Stein is scheduled to appear in Portland in a couple of weeks. And both parties have done some limited advertising already in the state, with campaigns traditionally shifting into high gear after Labor Day. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Meanwhile, a coalition of children's advocates today urged approval of a fall ballot measure that would hike the state's minimum wage. At a press conference that included the Maine Children's Alliance, Every Child Matters, and the Central Maine YWCA, advocates drew a link between low wages and childhood poverty. Melissa Stevens of Lewiston says when her children were very young, she was in an abusive relationship.
But I knew that if I left with the skills and opportunities that I had, I wouldn't be able to make ends meet to support my kids. So by leaving abuse, I was throwing them into poverty.
Stevens did become a single mother, and she worked a variety of jobs to make ends meet, and she says her family struggled to find equilibrium at her pay scale. Working as a waitress, she says a couple once tipped her by leaving a Bible verse at the table.
And my landlord doesn't accept Bible verses, nor does the electric company or the grocery store. Parents can't rely on tips to feed their kids. We need one fair wage.
Opponents of the ballot measure say it would actually reduce wages for tipped workers, such as waiters and other restaurant staff. The measure would raise the state's minimum wage from the current $7.50 an hour to $12 an hour by 2020. And a new report indicates that about a third of Maine's adult population is obese. The report from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation finds that Maine has the highest obesity rate in New England. Among high school students, Maine has the 19th highest rate of obesity. Dora Mills, a health expert at the University of New England, attributes some of that to food insecurity among low-income Maine households.
This is the first time in history that the high-calorie, poor nutritional foods are actually less costly, are cheaper than higher nutritional foods.
That's one reason why UNE and other organizations around Maine are offering education in how to eat healthy on a tight budget. And you can find a link to that obesity report on our website, mpbn.net. And in the southern Maine town of Yarmouth, another big health concern is lead. Tests have found elevated lead levels at two schools. The tests were conducted voluntarily by the school district in two of its older buildings. Yarmouth Superintendent Andrew Dolliff says the elevated lead levels found at Yarmouth Elementary School and Harrison Middle School are the result of corrosion in faucets.
We'll replace those faucets and fountains, retest, and if the lead levels are where all of the other faucets and fountains in the building are, which is below the 15 parts per billion, then we'll know we've addressed the issue.
15 parts per billion is the threshold at which the EPA says municipalities must take action to reduce lead. Dolliff says in the meantime, the schools are putting bubblers in all of the classrooms. The 240 Maine schools that get their water from wells are required to test for lead under state law. But Yarmouth Elementary and Harrison Middle are among schools that get their water through public water supplies and are not required to test. The Portland Press-Herald reports that environmental groups are calling for school-by-school testing across the state. Coming up, filling the education gap for migrant students whose parents make a living chasing the food harvest from Texas to Maine. For most kids in Maine, September means one thing, an end to summer holidays and the start of classes. But for some, the school year isn't that straightforward because their parents chase the seasons from Texas to Maine, harvesting vegetables, picking apples, and raking blueberries. The federally funded migrant education program seeks to fill some of the gaps left by a life on the road. Jennifer Mitchell recently spent a day down east at the Blueberry Harvest School and files this report.
It's early, shortly after 6 a.m. in Millbridge. Eight young children, too sleepy to misbehave, are going for a bone-shaking ride on a big yellow school bus to nearby Harrington, where the kids meet for class. At the front of the bus, keeping watch, is a young woman holding a clipboard.
I'm Tarsus Rodriguez, and I am the bus aide, as well as the 10 and 11-year-old co-teacher.
It's Rodriguez's first year with the Blueberry Harvest School. As co-teacher, she will help the kids with their lessons, but more than that, she wants to be there for any migrant child who just needs to talk, whether in English or in Spanish. Feeling displaced, she says, can be hard.
My parents are immigrants. They're from Central America. And I'm a first generation born, and, you know, going to school in the West Coast in California, where I'm from, was very difficult. And the teachers I did meet throughout my life that really did make an impact made all the difference, and I felt like maybe someday I might do that for someone else.
While they attend class, their parents are busy bringing in Maine's $75 million wild blueberry harvest. Some are Spanish speakers, but most of the raking is done by the region's native Mi'kmaq communities, who make the hours-long journey from Nova Scotia and New Brunswick to stay in the workers' camp in nearby Du Bois, where the bus stops next. Another 10 or 12 kids get on, and we rattle on down the road to Harrington Elementary School, where breakfast is the first item on the agenda. Here in the cafeteria, egg and cheese sandwiches, cereals, fruit, and milk are on offer. But the kids are most interested in the reporter's microphone.
Hi.
My name's Curtis.
My name's Jeff.
My name's
Linda.
My name's
Famous.
My name is Evander.
My name is Charles.
Where are you guys from?
Elsie Bookdurf.
You know what you're doing today?
I'm going to the beach.
Yeah.
The whole school is going on a science field trip to Roque Bluff State Park to learn about sea life. It's a trip that 5-year-old Sam, whose home language is Mi'kmaq, is looking forward to. He says he wants to find a big bucket so he can collect seashells.
And your parents right now?
My mom is working at the blueberry farm.
Sam has 3 siblings at the school and 2 others who are staying at camp to help their mother with the raking. Mi'kmaq teacher Peggy Clement says she's never seen so many kids in one summer, with about 100 or more per day reporting for school. A couple of years ago, that number was somewhere around 80. Parents, she says, are becoming more aware that the program exists. And Clement also has a personal reason for getting involved with the school. As a child, she worked every summer in the Barrens.
And that's how we earned our, let's say, our school clothes and stuff we needed for going back to school in the fall. And it's hard, like, you know, when you travel, especially when you're a child. But as children, they have to go with their parents.
The Blueberry Harvest School is part of the federally funded migrant education program offered year-round. The majority of Maine's participants come for 3 weeks in August to bring in the berries. Others work in Aroostook's broccoli fields.
I don't think that Maine has a full appreciation for the role that migrant workers play in the natural resource economy and for how challenging the lifestyle is.
Ian Yaffe directs Mano and Mano, a Millbridge-based nonprofit that runs the Harvest School program for the Maine Department of Education. Families, he says, should not have to choose between a livelihood and education.
I think Maine is a stronger place because of this and because of these families who are coming here to help feed us all.
The school buses drive nearly 300 miles each day. The teachers coordinate 3 weeks of lesson plans and classes for ages 3 through 13. Breakfast, lunch, and snacks are dished out by a brigade of canteen workers. And then there are the field trips. Back on the bus, en route to their day out, 2 girls from different villages in Canada have been singing songs in Mi'kmaq, comparing their language to that of a Passamaquoddy girl sitting near them who hails from Indian Township. A few minutes later, all the kids are on the beach, peering into tidal pools and playing educational games. When the harvest is over, many will return to Canada. Others will leave Maine to wherever their parents' next job takes them. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
Pearls!
So if you ever find an oyster shell, you might want to check.
And September also brings Labor Day, and in Maine, that typically means heavy traffic over the Labor Day holiday weekend. Maine Turnpike officials say this year is expected to be no exception.
We're expecting the turnpike to be quite busy over the Labor Day weekend. We're expecting more than 1.1 million vehicles to be traveling on the turnpike over the Labor Day weekend.
That's Maine Turnpike Authority spokesperson Erin Courtney. Courtney says today is expected to be the busiest day on the roadway, with the heaviest traffic occurring mid-afternoon through 7 p.m. Maine State Police Chief Robert Williams says patrols are being beefed up for the holiday weekend, which he says is expected to bring record traffic. And the U.S. Coast Guard is warning New England mariners to take precautions on the water during the holiday weekend because of a storm that could impact the region. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says Tropical Storm Hermine might impact southern New England on Sunday into Tuesday with heavy rains and strong winds. Swells might also produce rough surf and increase the risk of strong rip currents. Meteorologist Paul Cousins tells us what to expect and when here in Maine.
For at least half of Maine, a splendid 3-day holiday weekend is in the offing.
We're certainly launching this episode on solid ground as high pressure shoulders into Maine. Clouds will be dissolving this evening and will cool to the 40s across the mountains in northern Maine, 50 to 55 elsewhere. Tomorrow, sunshine will be filtered over northern and down east Maine, with full sun for the rest of the state, 71 to 80 north to south, and do look for cooling afternoon sea breezes. Sunday will be the brightest day of all, nearly unlimited sunshine, highs near 80, cooler along the coast. The relic of a transformed Hermine will be meandering off the Delmarva coast Labor Day. Look for mostly sunny skies over the northern third of the state, increasing clouds over western, central, and down east Maine, but pleasant. Only over southern Maine will a low overcast sweep ashore from the Gulf. Will be some spotty afternoon drizzle, along with a stiff breeze. Of course, do keep apprised of future developments. These storms can be fickle. Warmer, more humid weather fills the rest of the week. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for Maine Public Broadcasting.
That's the news on this day in Maine, Friday, September 2nd, 2016. Robert Holt composed our theme music. Thanks to our news leaders, Keith Shortall, Susan Sharon, and Andrew Catalina, and to Steve Missler, Fred Bever, Matt Leary, Jennifer Mitchell, Ed Morin, and Nora Flaherty for their contributions. Please share your thoughts on the podcast. It's easy to rate and comment in iTunes, or you can email us at tdim@mpbn.net. I'm Barbara Caridi. Our news staff is off for the Labor Day holiday. I'll be back here with you on Tuesday. For all of us here at Maine Public Broadcasting, thanks for listening and have a great weekend.